OTB.
Bemused, I think, is probably how he feels in his head. Bemused how they could go from where they were last season, 99 points, 67 games unbeaten at home, to a situation where they could be on the edge today of losing six games in a row at home.
OTB live commentary. Never miss the action right here on OTB Sports Radio. Keep up to date with the latest scores on the OTB Sports app. The OTB Sports app. Live score updates straight to your phone. The OTB Podcast Network.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Now, you're very welcome back. So we're talking rugby, in particular Leinster 16, Munster 6 at the RDS yesterday, a fourth Pro 14 title in a row for Leinster. We're joined by former Irish international Niamh Briggs, and we have Brendan Fanning of the Sunday Independent. Brendan, I take it you were there?
I was, Joe, just about. Misunderstanding over email applications, etc., and they're very, very strict these days. There's no room for manoeuvre. And if it wasn't for somebody pulling out, I would have been watching it off the box or on the box. But in any case, yes, that's the long-winded answer to your question. Yes, I was there.
Those trophy lifts don't really work on TV. I suspect when you're at the empty stadium, they don't quite work either.
No, but you can take a picture of it and you can send it to your pals who are Lunsters, as they are known, people living in Dublin who support Munster, and ask them to put a caption on the title. I don't know where Munster are going to go. There was nowhere for them to go at the end of that. It must have been extraordinarily difficult for them standing there watching the ticker tape and the Leinster lads jumping up and down on the podium and Munster standing there yet again empty-handed. For a team as well-resourced as Munster are in terms of the wages that they pay and the facilities that they have, I don't think they've left many stones unturned on either of those fronts. But there is something seriously wrong with that group, that they are not able to get up to the right level for a game as important in that, or as important as that, rather. And bear in mind, that had to be a bigger game for Munster than it was for Leinster, and I think that was illustrated in the team selections. Munster, you know, decade without a trophy, heading for a potential sixth defeat in a row against Leinster. They had to be better than they were.
Niamh, even if we just take the first half, 6-6, I'm not sure how it was 6-6.
No, definitely not. I think you felt, I thought going in at half time, Munster would have come out with loads of energy in the second half because they would have been buoyed by the fact that Leinster seemed to be not as clinical or as accurate in the scoring zone as they usually are, and that they went through loads of mini kind of bad patches and still came in at halftime drawing. I thought, I couldn't believe it either, to be honest. I thought a lot of good luck, a lot of poor play by Leinster, or a bit of poor play, and then a bit of, you know, good defending by Keith Earls in crucial times, I think. So, yeah, from that disappointing, or from that aspect, it was disappointing. But from the very, very start, the kickoff, Leinster's kickoff, and Munster couldn't exit, they just never fired a shot after that, unfortunately. And, yeah, as Brendan said, it was it's hard to see where they go from here.
Because Leinster, for people who didn't see the game, Brendan, Leinster butchered a number of tries after brilliant play to get themselves in a position where it was just, you know, last pass to go over the line. I think O'Loughlin had a pass to Larmour twice, maybe, which didn't come off. Then Scott Fardy was held up over the line by Coombs and Stander. There was another point where, again, Leinster were making some brilliant breaks on 32 minutes. Van der Fleer made a break, and then Keenan, with all his intelligence, was on Keenan's shoulder, and then Henshaw came through, and Keith Earls running back couldn't believe his luck that the ball was just passed to him. You know, there were these moments happening quite a bit in that first half, and then at the other end, Munster weren't threatening. Leinster had a monopoly on possession and territory. So, you know, things could have got pretty ugly from a Munster point of view if those tries had been converted.
Yeah, and when that doesn't happen, so if you're the dominant team and you're all over them territorially and you're all over them in terms of possession and you're creating all these chances and you're not putting them away and you look at the scoreboard and you see it's 3-3 or 6-3 or whatever it is and your head is melted thinking, you know, we really need... We need to make this pay because rugby, no more than most sports, everyone gets a go on the ball at some point. So you just hope that when they get their go on the ball, they're not going to be you hope they are going to be as profligate as you were, and you hope that they're not going to be as accurate. So I looked at Munster when they came out after halftime, and I was looking at Peter O'Mahony, and he was high-fiving somebody as they were getting ready for the start of the second half. And I was thinking, okay, they were in there saying, lads, unbelievable that we're still in this game. We've no right to be still in this game, but we are. We now have the wind, which was difficult to harness, but nevertheless, we have that in our favour. We've dodged a whole friggin' series of bullets here, a whole firing squad, and we're still in it. And I expected them to really get on the ball in the second half and to dominate some periods. And no, just wasn't happening.
Yeah, it must be demoralising to say the least, Niamh. Like, there's not much Munster can take out of that game. What was so different for you, Niamh, between the 13-10 defeat at Thomond, which really could have been a Munster win, and Leinster kind of snatched that one with that try towards the death? What was so different in just general play, the ebb and flow of the game, with what we saw last night?
I felt that the more pressure Munster were under, they regressed back to type, to this static, laboured kind of game. When they had the ball, were happy enough to kick it back to Leinster, and then we didn't kick well enough. You know, you had to kick because Leinster's frontline defence was so good. Like, Leinster were unbelievable yesterday. But you had to turn them, their back three. You had to find grass. You had to put them under pressure in some shape or form. And they didn't do that. They didn't do it at all. I can't remember if they put more than, you know, I think they had one patch, you know, that Gavin Coombs half break where they put a couple of phases together. And in my mind, I was thinking at halftime, that's all they have to do is try and hold on to the ball and go through the phases and, you know, eke out a half break here or there. But the choices that were made, they were making their decisions. You know, they looked to get on the front foot at one stage in the first half with, you know, Carberry, Haley and Earls, and it was a 3v3, and you thought, okay, Carberry's just going to nudge us here now and down the line, and he just skipped past Earls. Ball was floaty, Earls slipped, and it's turnover for Leinster. I thought from that point of view, they just lacked energy or guidance. You know, we spoke about previous to this game the emotional, the ability to get emotionally up for this game. You know, Billy's last game or last year at Munster, CJ's heading home, and I thought that they would come with almost like an Ireland England performance last week, that emotional hype, that ability to get you over the game line when, you know, even if you're not as physically as strong as what you're up against. And they didn't do that. I thought defensively they were very narrow. And you know, Leinster were able to get to the edge so easily. I thought they literally played the same loop play, I'd say, about eight times and gained yardage eight times. Okay. And for me, how nobody from a sideline perspective or on the pitch was able to fix that as they went would be very worrying. That, you know, they seem to get caught. And to be fair to Leinster, like, they run it so well. And it's Henshaw's ability with ball in hand. And he's so good at the moment that it just makes defenders sit down because he's on fire. Mm. Whereas I just felt that they almost paid him too much respect. Were happy enough just to kind of sit on him. Like, I thought Delande was caught a few times, left Chris Farrell very narrow in turn. Keith Earls had to bite in. There was just like a litany of poor decisions throughout the game, and they never fired a shot. I think that's probably the most disappointing thing for them as players.
It's quite surprising, that point on the loop play, isn't it? Because it's not yesterday or the day before that we've first seen that, you know? I mean, I thought the loop play almost had its day at a certain point because it was such a go-to weapon, and yet, I mean, it was like Munster were dealing with it for the first time almost, Niamh.
Yeah, but the pitcher had changed a small bit, so usually the loop play is run off of Johnny and the 10, whereas this time it was off the 9. So you're just, as a defensive line, you almost kind of have to understand or reiterate. So if they do it the first time, that's absolutely perfect. And you then gather yourself and say, okay, the next time this happens, okay, you have, you know, in your downtime, you have him, I have this player. And they needed someone to take control of that, and don't think they did. And it's funny, for the whole first half, they went to the edge. They went out the back and went to the edge. They came out the first and second half. And I said to the lads I was watching the match with, watch Henshaw carry now, because they showed a picture to Munster so much. Watch Munster just drift off them, and that's exactly what he did. He just carried straight up the centre and had Hugh Aquino on the shoulder.
Yeah, that's really
really good play.
Yeah, no,
really
good play. And you've explained that brilliantly, and it was out the back and then out to the edges routinely, and then, as you said, they just punched holes after Munster had begun to adjust to that. I mean, it's really interesting, Brennan, when Niamh explains all that. And is, you know, the way she says that, you know, fair enough, the first or second time it happens and you're sucker punched, fine. But then maybe a team should get together and say, well, listen, next time it happens, let's do X, Y, and Z. If it was a bunch of rookies out there, you'd say, okay, look, fair enough. It's tricky. It's a big occasion. But you're talking about a World Cup winner in Dillande. You're talking about Peter O'Mahony. You're talking about Keith Earls. Plenty of experience there. I mean, that's kind of as disappointing as the lack of attack from Munster.
Yeah, but there were a few elements to that. One, there were subtle changes in what Leinster were doing. It wasn't as simple, like, you know, Johnny Sexton used to run a wrap around the man outside him, which worked two, three, four times initially, and then everybody knew about it, and he was going to get cleaned on the far side. Leinster mixed it up well. Moreover, they had lots of opportunity. They had lots of platforms. Leinster went out of their way to give Munster very, very, very few attacking platforms. And Leinster, every time they packed down to a scrum, no matter where it was, they were looking to attack. And that really kept Munster on edge. The other thing is that it's worth reiterating, Leinster by and large are better players. So, of course, it's a matter of opinion, but I ran through the 15, the starting 15s again. I picked Chris Farrell ahead of Rory O'Loughlin, maybe. It'd be a pretty, on current form, Earls and Kearney is nip and tuck. I put Carberry in a 10. I'd have Tadhg Byrne in any team. And it's a toss-up between Ruddock and Coombs. Coombs is just an outstanding rugby player and has a fantastic future ahead of him. Everybody else would be a Leinster player. You know, that's a serious when you have that kind of horse flesh on your side. Plus, you have the weight of the recent history between the teams, where Leinster, I thought the first shot that Leinster fired in this game, and Niamh was saying how sad it was for her or for Munster fans, that there were no shots being fired by Munster. Go back to the last game, with the last time they met down at Thomond Park, Leinster dug that game out, and they dug it out through Luke McGrath, a fellow who is completely surplus to requirements, and for my money, the form scrum half in the country at the moment. He is an immensely strong player. Physically, he's reasonably dynamic for a small man, but mentally, he's absolutely first class. And he's playing way better than Conor Murray is playing. And if you look at all the big players, the big matchups between Leinster players and Munster players, Leinster are winning those matchups. And moreover, the tonic that they got for winning that game down in Limerick when they last met, I thought was enormous.
Yeah, once Jack Conan scored that try on, what, 45 minutes, 13-6 felt like an impossible lead, which is kind of crazy to say it. On the Luke McGrath point, I'm glad you raised that, Niamh. I mean, I was watching it thinking, geez, I mean, Jepson Gibson Park has done remarkably well here to almost be like Irish number nine. What's Luke McGrath done wrong, or what's he not doing right?
I'm not sure. I agree with Brendan. I think he's the informed scrum half and has been for a while now, I think. And it's funny, you know, to see Gibson Park come off the bench for 3 or 4 minutes. And I think it was more so because Luke picked up a knock. I don't think it was, a substitute that they were making tactically. So obviously, Cullen, Lancaster, these lads, their full trust and their faith is in him. I think... is it a preconceived notion, you know, where we speak about a bit like Jack Carty, where things mightn't have gone well for them at one stage in a previous regime, and because the coaching ticket is still pretty much the same, do they have the same preconceived ideas? I don't know. That's a question for Farrell, but it's something that I wonder a bit, because I even thought Ross Byrne was brilliant yesterday, and I couldn't, you know, understand why there was a big debate about who was going to back up Johnny, because for me it was pretty much clear cut on that performance. So, yeah, look, I think they're obviously questions that the Irish coaching thinking are getting big money to make, and we can surmise. But I don't know whether it's because at one stage was it a preconceived, you know, idea, or, you know, did Joe not think at one stage that he wasn't good enough, and then has Andy Farrell just continued on that path? I don't know, but for sure yesterday he was brilliant and has been for the best part of the season.
Yeah, Brendan, have you any inside track on what Luke McGrath has to do?
Well, I think Luke McGrath has a bit of a flaw in his game, and the higher you go up the food chain, the more likely that flaw is to be become evident and costly. And Luke's history against Saracens, if you go back to that European quarterfinal, he had a bad game that day, and it really, really was costly. And a couple of days out for Ireland, he's thrown a pass that has gone 6 inches off target or a foot off target at a crucial moment, and something breaks down. And that, unfortunately for him, has been a recurring feature. Maybe it is the case that Luke McGrath is absolutely top of the range, 100% savage player, just below international level. But I guess that's what selection is all about. But you have the bizarre situation, as Niamh said, where Gibson Park can't get his place with Leinster. Well, he's not first choice at Leinster. And he's ahead of Luke in the pecking order for Ireland. And then equally bizarre, Andy Farrell picked Chris Casey during the Six Nations, then didn't use him initially, then used him. I thought everything about that Casey selection, or Craig Casey, I beg your pardon, everything about that Craig Casey selection struck me as being populist at the time. He was going well. He was getting all the game time for Munster when Murray was out. Everybody loved him. He's plays at 100 miles an hour. He's got seemingly a savage work rate. But did that equate to him being ready for international rugby? I didn't think so. And then when he got in, apparently there was a reluctance to actually play him. And then he comes on yesterday, and he looked twice the player Conor Murray was. But Casey came on yesterday, his accuracy was absolutely off the charts. Everything went exactly where it was supposed to go. He made a searing break of about 30 metres. The problem I have with Casey is that if he makes a break and he's caught, it's a turnover, because he's not physically capable of keeping the ball. And that is a worry for a nine. But, look, selection is only one issue that Munster have. If I was their MD or their CEO, I'd be sitting down saying, we need to tear everything up pretty much and start again. We are really in a very, very bad place here, and it's just not acceptable that as big a brand as we are, and Munster was a bigger brand before Leinster ever was, that they've got some serious fixing to do.
It seems to be the consensus, Niamh, across the papers, even we were viewing them earlier on. Neil Francis was saying the question must be asked, where are Munster going? How much longer can their head coach stay in the job? You know, those kind of serious questions are being asked now in the national newspapers. Neil Francis's sense was Munster have regressed under Van Graan, and they should be an awful lot better than this. So is your sense that they're regressing, standing still, progressing, but yesterday bad day at the office? What's your overview?
I listened to that this morning, actually, and I read Neil's article. I don't want to be calling out anybody, but, you know, to get the chop, and Van Graan and Stephen Kenny last night, it's been a tough old 24 yeah. hours for a couple of people. But I do think yesterday was a bad day. I do think that there is some sort of mental block, maybe is probably the right word, when Munster come to play Leinster, in terms of how, you know, I had seen so much good stuff over the last season in terms of, now I know, I get it's only Pro 14 level, in terms of the teams that you're playing week in, week out isn't, you know, exactly a Leinster or a Toulouse like next week. But what they were trying to do and their ability to execute things and their decision making, which, you know, doesn't ever change, I thought was way better. I thought from an attack perspective, they were looking to move the points of contact. I think, yesterday, they just lacked energy. I don't know. It's hard to put. I'm sure they're sitting at home today and review tomorrow, and they'll be pretty devastated, because I think it was just more of things that they could have controlled as opposed to what was going on, or, you know, off out the back in terms of board level or coaching level or you know, any of that kind of stuff. I think for them as players, you know, when you look at those players on paper, you know, Lions, World Cup winners, players that have a phenomenal talent, and yet they couldn't figure out a way yesterday for, you know, to get out of holes and not to be so passive. You know, that's a mental thing for me. That's an ability. And sometimes when you don't have it, some games you can get away with it, and most days against good teams like Leinster, like we can't really shy away from the fact that Leinster, you know, Luke McGrath looked unbelievable yesterday because the pack put him on such front football and the amount of possessions that they had, and Cronin and Ruddock were unbelievable and they seemed to be everywhere. Ty Ferland comes off the bench and is throwing these little pop passes that any 10/ centre would be drooling over. Yeah. You know, their ability to be able to play ball in hand no matter where they are on the pitch and what number they're wearing is something so far evolved from what Munster are and where they are. That's just where it is at the moment. And, you know, unfortunately, I do agree with Brendan, things have to change, you know, and I'm sure that they are in terms of their academy structure is starting to get better, I think, and the young players are starting to come through. And hopefully, you know, this is an evolution. And is Van Graan the right man to head it? Like, I'm not sure, you're not sure. It's the players that are involved in that group. Do they buy into him? Do they appear to do, I think. They seem to be very together. I just think yesterday they just didn't have any answers for Leinster and that physicality.
Yeah. I mean, I genuinely don't know. I mean, it seems to me Van Graan has done a lot of good things, to be honest. And bringing in Larkin was a good move and Rentry a good move. And you definitely get a real sense of buy-in from everybody down there. Like, Brendan, your point about how many Munster players will get into the Leinster team or vice versa, I feel like, is that not in a defence in part of Van Graan and what he's working with?
Well, it certainly, there's an element of misfortune that their evolution should be taking place when their neighbours, whom previously they had under their thumb, are now lording it over them. So that makes the evolution more difficult because it's now being done under a microscope and they're constantly being compared and contrasted with the best in the country.
Yeah.
But and it's worth remembering that the best in the country are the best in the country for a few pretty important reasons, one of which is they have a huge population base. And if you want to go back and have it, like when I'm talking about Munster needing to tear it up and go back to the start, they need to go back to the start and look at where they're getting their players from. How many players are they generating? How do they have enough clubs? Are the clubs doing the right thing? Do they have enough schools playing rugby? Have they been wiped by Limerick hurling? Like, there was a time when rugby was the undisputed number one in Limerick. I'm not so sure that's the case now. Like, Limerick hurling seems to be a really good example of how you get your stuff together in a fairly short period of time, as in maybe 4 or 5 years, and you're winning silverware. You know, rugby in Limerick is up against that. And all of these things need to be considered because all of those things feed into identity. And Munster put a massive store on identity, absolutely massive store. And if you look at the four provinces, Joe, I think it's ironic that the one with the least strong identity is Leinster. Ulster have it by virtue of politics. They operate largely in a different jurisdiction. Connacht have it because they're west of the Shannon, and they put themselves forward as being the afterthought, and that is their reason to be as focused and as tight-knit as they are. And Munster Rugby were teaching people how to beat the All Blacks in this country before anyone else could do it. Leinster, meanwhile, were the fancy dance in Dublin. You know, so Munster have had that they have the raw materials of building their identity, and they've had it for years. But it's been going on and on and on and on, and maybe that identity has become diluted. In any professional sporting organization, you're not going to be staffed solely by locals, and neither should you be. Of course, you need some diversity. But if you're going to use identity as your calling card, you need to be very, very careful that you protect it and promote it.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Change of tack maybe, Niamh. How did Joey Carberry look?
Yeah, look, as I've spoken to you about him loads of times before, and, you know, he's obviously an unbelievable player, but we've just got to remain patient and allow him to, you know, keep working his way back in. I think it's obviously a bigger step yesterday than what we'd seen in the previous couple of weeks. And yeah, look, he's still working back to that match sharpness and that ability to feel comfortable and confident on the ball and off it. So I thought there were, you know, a couple of flashes of good moments, but not enough. I thought that he sat a little bit too deep in the pocket. And it's very difficult for us to be able to sit here and talk about it really when Munster had so little ball and so little attack ball. Yeah, look, you know, he'll definitely get better and he'll learn from it for sure. And I think the more games that he'll play, he'll start coming back to form.
Yeah. What was your sense in the stadium, Brendan?
My sense in the stadium was that Joey's timing was slightly off by a couple of years. But he left Leinster to go to Munster in order to play 10. And initially it started off really, really well. And then he ended up in the horrors of the injury. And I would disagree with Niamh in saying that how good she reckoned that Ross Byrne was. I reckon that if Leinster had a quicker 10 driving the machine in the first half and they were getting all that ball, and Ross, for all his good points, is not quick, I think they would have done better. And it did cross my mind, what if Joey was at 10 for Leinster rather than Munster? I think he would have done very well. I think he did okay in the circumstances, but as we alluded to earlier on, part of Leinster's game plan was to give Munster as few attacking platforms as possible, and they achieved that. So once you do that, you're going to limit the scope of a 10. Mm.
You're still upset he's not number 10 for Clontarf, let alone Leinster.
I'm not at all. I accept the time must move on, and I'm eternally grateful to Joey for doing what he did before he did move on.
Mm. If Niamh, you mentioned Henshaw in the first half. I think Liam Tolan made the point on commentary for Air that, you know, if the first half was about Henshaw and those brilliant moves out the back and out wide, second half, the likes of Conan in particular and Ruddock took over and just started strangling the game a bit as well. Conan's having a hell of a time. Could he kick on a bit? And you know, he's only 20 caps for Ireland, had a very good game against England. I know Caelan Doris is waiting in the wings, but at this stage of Conan's career, there's probably a now or never quality to international honours at least.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought he was excellent yesterday. I think, you know, it's funny how a lot of those Leinster players come and carrying on from that end of Six Nations really looked enthused and full of energy, and yet the Munster players, not so much. I thought it was like night and day looking at them on television. I thought Conan was brilliant. I think he's a fantastic footballing number eight. I think there were question marks over his ability to mix it in the physicality states. And I thought, you know, he, to be fair to him, didn't have much in the physicality states to go up against yesterday, but he lorded it. And himself and Rhys Ruddock were just seemed to be on everything and in everything. And yeah, look, he was brilliant. And I'd love to see him kick on. I'd love to see, you know, with a bit of confidence from a coach at international level and a run of consistent games, how much more he can improve, because I still think that there's more that he can do. I think there's more in him, but for me, Rhys Ruddock was unbelievable. I thought he was everywhere, and it's mad to think that he did so well for Ireland during the Six Nations in one game and we didn't see him again. It's probably just goes to show the embarrassment to Richards that a Leinster and Ireland have.
Brendan, Rhys Ruddock must be scratching his head at times. Like, brilliant form for Leinster, get a little chance with Ireland, in fairness take it, was the general consensus, and then not to be seen again for the rest of the championship. And then curious for your thoughts on Conan as well.
Certainly Reese's old man is certainly scratching his head. I've never lets an opportunity slip to text me or other people in this job to have a look at how well Reese is going. And he is going very well, and Niamh is right. It wasn't as if when he did get brought back in, he didn't suddenly, you know, make a town halls of things. He didn't. He played well. But the level of back row talent that we have in the country at the moment is astonishing. And Coombs is a fellow I cannot wait to see play international rugby. I really hope to see Doris get back fit again. Mm. I'm delighted that Jack Conner is going well, given the injury problems that he had last year. And in fairness to him, he's been patient. And he has come back, and I'm glad to see him achieve success again with Ireland and with Leinster. But never mind Connacht for a moment, never mind Ulster for a moment, the level of back row talent that exists across Leinster and Munster is absolutely savage.
You almost need it, don't you? It's like such an attritional position. You're looking at all these guys and you're saying, how long a career will any of them have?
Well, look at Rhys Ruddock.
Sure, that's a good point. Yeah, he's the exception that proves the rule, maybe.
Yeah, and you know, Niamh mentioned earlier on that it was easy for a couple of Leinster lads to keep, well, Rhys in particular and Jack Conan, because Leinster were going forward and it's easy to look good. There was no man that I can think of immediately who was better at going from a carrying positively from a standing start than Rhys Ruddock. If you give him shit ball, 9 times out of 10, he will turn it into a positive carry, which is in a game like rugby is a very difficult thing to do. Mm. But if you're going to put me on the spot and say, if I was picking my best Irish back row in the morning, would I pick Rhys in it? No, I wouldn't.
Okay. We're chatting with Brendan Fanning and Niamh Briggs. Our rugby coverage is brought to you by Vodafone, Team of Us, everyone in. I guess all of this is in the context of next week as well, Niamh. So now Munster have to dust themselves off and welcome Toulouse to Thomond Park on Saturday. We've both Leinster and Munster games live, I should tell people, by the way, if you want to listen to them, we'll have them both here and off the ball. Like, I mean, it's funny the way we're talking about the two teams yesterday and the energy. It was as if Munster were off a defeat to England and somehow the Leinster lads were off a win against England. You know, the energy both sides seem to carry into the game. So it's hard to know what kind of Munster will pitch up against Toulouse. Traditionally, you would say they'll be backs to the wall now. They'll, you know, be killing each other in training and there'll be all kind of recriminations. It's hard to know in 2021 what the new school as opposed to the old school version of that is at Munster. They'll watch videos and go through the process, I presume, and have to do something against Toulouse.
Yeah, big thing for me is probably they would have taken solace in the fact that they were heading home to Thomond Park to a full crowd on a Saturday evening, I think, you know, and that would have given them kind of an extra bit of a boost, whereas they don't have that now. So, look, it's going to be a difficult week for them. I think they'll obviously review this game on Monday, but they're going to have to park it very quickly in order for them to be able to show up physically and mentally against this Toulouse side, who, you know, are unbelievable at playing attack and rugby. And if Munster aren't going to be switched on, I think they're going to be in for another very long day. And, you know, effectively within space of 14 days, their season could have gone from being potentially really, really good to being a bit of a disaster. So it's a lot of pressure on them, a lot of pressure on that coaching ticket to try and get them back up first. And the player selection, I think, is going to be huge. I think they've got to get some bodies in, fresh bodies, in terms of, I thought, the likes of Peter and CJ, I thought they looked fatigued. And
that's not going to improve over the next few days.
No. So then why, you know, they've got to trust what's behind it. And as Brendan said, you know, Gavin Coombs has had an unbelievable season, and, you know, he's more than capable of playing eight. So put trust in him to play there. Players like Jack O'Donoghue sitting on the bench that came in yesterday and can add value and add an athletic ability. He might not be the biggest in the world in terms of physicality, but he's incredibly athletic and very intelligent rugby player. And, you know, they have players now. You know, build up to this game yesterday was all about the 53 or 54 players that Munster have used throughout the season. And finally, we put them on parity with Leinster in terms of strength and depth and getting these young guys game time. Well, you've got them game time throughout the season for this cause, you know, so trust in their ability and have faith in them. And then if things aren't going your way, then you can unload the likes of, you know, CJs and the Peter O'Manies and these guys off the bench if needs be. But he's definitely going to have to do something, and he's going to have to try and find some energy from somewhere.
Yeah, and the word is both Sexton and O'Mahony are injury doubts for the respective games. How do you see Saturday at Thomond then, Brendan? Any Niamh's points you want to pick up on?
Well, I'd say Hugo Mola is very, very happy that he's going to an empty Thomond Park rather than a full one. So it's nothing like the scary trip it used to be. And he will have had a long, hard look at the way Munster failed to fire on a day in which they needed to have both barrels fully loaded, and he will take a lot of confidence from that. I think the selection is going to be really interesting, regardless of whether Peter O'Mahony is fit or not. The problem with Peter O'Mahony is that because he's such a big leader in the group and because he's such a forceful personality, a very hard fella to leave out if he tells you that, no, actually I'm raring to go and I'm chomping at the bit to get out here, when evidently, whether or not he is chomping at the bit, he's not very effective. Yet, bizarrely, David Nusafora has given him a central contract, which is a tricky one to figure out if you try and relate that to form. But in any case, if I was picking a Munster back row on Saturday, regardless of fitness, I'd have Ty Byrne at 6, I'd have Coombs at 8, and I'd have Jack O'Donoghue at 7.
Right. Do you think Munster will win?
No.
Yeah. Niamh?
clearing
of the throat, Niamh, was all we needed to hear.
I would just love to see a response from last weekend.
Mm.
That would be a big thing for me. I think how they respond will tell a lot about where this group are and where they're going, more importantly, because let's face it, they're not European contenders at the top table really as such.
Mm.
And their ability to win something was probably, or their opportunity to win was yesterday. So as the squad evolves, you've got to find a way of where they're going. I think next Saturday will tell a lot about where they're going.
Yeah. No, perfect sense. And as you say, like, geez, it'll be a very disappointing season in the space of 7 days if they lose on Saturday. As for Leinster, then, they have Toulon on Friday. I think Toulon are more worried about avoiding relegation in the top 14. I was reading in one of the papers this morning, Brendan. But for Leinster, it's another kind of season where, have they been hard-pressed this year? Oh, I guess in Thomond they were. I guess, to be fair, in Thomond they were. But, I mean, even the last time we saw them in the Champions Cup was against a Northampton side at the RDS who were, you know, mildly interested for a while. And then it was just all too easy for Leinster, who were missing big names as well. Like, there's a real sense that they waltz through the first two-thirds of every season now before they really have to stretch themselves. That's the only kind of thing with Leinster at the moment.
Okay, there's not a lot they can control in that.
No, it's not their fault. It's just a reality. No.
Yeah, but I would say, first thing, Leo Cullen thinks of when he gets out of the scratcher in the morning, and Stuart Lancaster equally, is, are we going to fail the way we did against Saracens in the close? Now, obviously, it's not going to be Saracens.
Sure.
But the closing stages of Europe, and their fear is that no matter what they do, the competition they're in to prepare them for the really tough stuff is not ideal. I mean, it's not good for anybody's business that the Pro 14 is such a crock. It really isn't. So they are still haunted by that day against Saracens. It melted their heads, and I can understand why. So I don't think they're going to have a huge amount of problem with Toulon. Exeter is going to be a different story. I know that they will move heaven and earth to get their hands on the Heineken Cup again.
Mm.
And while not all of their players are, you know, top of the range international players, and some of us might have been fooled by that and thinking because they produce so many very good players that they are automatically going to be test players. I'm not sure if that is the case, but I think they will be good enough to win Europe.
Okay. Very good. Interesting stuff. Brendan Fanning of the Sunday Independent. My thanks to you, Niamh Briggs. Thanks to you as well. Cheers, guys.
Thank you.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.